Visioneers, Episode 6, Making Room for a Miracle.
Imagine how Mark feels, watching helpless from the other side of the world. He's seeing one of his visioneers brutally murdered. Des, there's a lot of Christian symbolism here. Did you intend that?
Well, up to a point, yes. But we have to understand that this is an ecumenical message. The listener is really being invited to step back and see the ultimate tragedy for the human race, when human minds are infected by evil that would destroy the precious life of a Louis Valdez or a Jesus of Nazareth.
Well, you're not going to leave us here. What happens next?
Well, I'll let the story tell itself from the book. For Mark Venture, watching in Jerusalem, the impact is electric. Gasps of despair and amazement burst from the small group of viewers in the studio during the last 30 seconds of the telecast. Mark has sprung to his feet. To Muhammad and David, he snaps, "Wait here for me," and brushes past a still reeling Pamela Barrett to the door of the studio and out into the hallway. Watching everything from your thinking room, you know that Mark must speak with you. In a moment, his face, haggard with despair, stares out at you from the television screen. "He was my friend and brother," he cries. "I had a premonition that something like this would happen. Why didn't I get him out of there?" "Mark," you say, "I think he knew it too. There was no stopping it. Now we must go on. You must go on. The world is waiting for you." "You must speak to George," he says. "Don't leave him there like that, all alone. I can't reach him from here. Tell him to carry on for Luis, for all of us. I'll be in touch with him as soon as I can. Right now I have to go to Esther to prevent another tragedy. Will you tell him that from me? And tell him, God, please tell him that I'm sorry. Will you tell him?" "Yes, Mark, yes. I'll tell him."
Mark, what are you doing?
Pamela Barrett has come out of the studio looking for him.
"You've got to come back. The whole world's going crazy."
Mark re-enters the studio. Pamela Barrett is almost incoherent with excitement.
"Mark, you've got to make a statement. We've got calls coming in from around the world. Oh, this is a mind blower. People are already saying it's a second crucifixion, this time done live on television with the whole world watching. Do you know the implications of that? If you don't, ask your friend Bill Bates. He's on the phone from Los Angeles." Pushes her handset at him.
"Hello, Bill. It's Mark." "Christ, Mark!" Bates's voice is shrill with excitement. "What a hell of a thing! This country's going crazy! I swear the phone lines of every television station from here to New York are jammed with people trying to find out what they just saw. I'm sorry, Mark. What can I say? Luis was just incredible. But to be gunned down like that makes me sick to the stomach. Do you know anything more about it?" "Not much. We've got to be careful how we react. Esther's still out there, you know, in the hands of the terrorists. We can't say anything they'll misinterpret." "Oh, I understand, but Mark, you'll need to make some kind of a statement right now. Just give me a minute and I'll put you on air and I'll hook you into the networks across the country. They're all still open with commentators trying to think of something to say." "All right. I'll make a brief statement." "Okay, we're live now. This is Bill Bates in Los Angeles speaking with Mark Venture in Jerusalem. Mark is the leader of the Visioneers and, like the rest of us, has just witnessed the tragic murder of Louis Valdez while he was broadcasting his vision of peace for the world. Mark, can you help us to understand what's going on?" "What we've just seen is brutality at its worst. Louis Valdez stood for decency and love in the human family. He believed people are good. He was gunned down, for whatever reasons, by a brutal minority who think they have the power to behave like that. The world can no longer tolerate such wretched wickedness. And that's the basic message of the Visioneers. Louis Valdez spoke of it with all the passion of an eloquent and committed human being. The way he died speaks with equal clarity of the alternative. Now people must choose which kind of future they want to have. As visioneers, we're confident that the overwhelming desire for decency and peace abroad in the hearts of people in every land will win the day. That's all I can say now. I'll speak again soon. May I ask that everyone listening say a prayer of thanks for the life of Louis Valdez?
Mark puts down the phone and signals to Mohammed Hussein and David Roth that they must go. He nods to Pamela, and the three men leave the building in the darkness just before dawn. Oh, that's powerful. The next piece is called Making Room for a Miracle. What does that mean?
It's ancient wisdom. If you want a miracle to happen, you have to make room for it. Now that's what Mark does. He had come to Jerusalem knowing where Esther and her friend Jenny were being held, but it's up to him to get them out. That's going to be the miracle.
What happens?
Well, they drive out towards Bethlehem, and this is in Arab territory, but it's under Israeli occupation, so they have to go through the checkpoints, and they have David Roth driving, so that makes it easier for them. And finally, at the right moment, Mark tells him where to stop.
As an Israeli whose son was just murdered, David Roth must be under a terrible lot of stress.
Yes, he is, but Mark convinces him to give him a chance to show what can be done. Mark goes then alone to reconnoitre, and this is where he has a powerful encounter. I'll read it for you. Mark gets out of the car and walks slowly towards the buildings, staying in the shadow of the embankment and being careful to keep a line of olive trees between him and the buildings. He skirts the main group, then pauses on the crest of a hill, overlooking the one where he knows the women are being held. It's only 100 meters away. He could easily be seen if he stepped out from behind the cover of the trees. On his stomach, in the soft sandy earth of the road, he crawls to a good vantage point and lies there motionless, staring down at the building. Somewhere a cock crows, breaking the stillness of the morning, while the tinkle of bells comes intermittently from a small group of goats feeding on the coarse, short grass further down along the roadside. As Mark lies there, looking at the place where Esther is being held, his mind is a torrent of questions. Was David right? Are men who would drag innocent women out of the car and hold them hostage likely to understand any language other than violence? Is this any different from the hideous spectacle he had just seen on television? Sweet, trusting, passionate Louis Valdez, gunned down by a savagery he didn't understand? Well, perhaps he did understand it, only too well, and knew he had to push it to the final limit to make a breakthrough. But Louis Valdez was gambling with his own life. Here, Esther's life is at stake. Something grips tight in Mark's throat as he thinks about the time they spent under the star-filled sky in Australia less than 2 weeks ago. He stares hard at the house, wanting to see past the drab exterior to the inside, to be with Esther, cutting her free from her bonds. Revulsion rises in him stronger now. What bastards they are, these men, who capture innocent women and gun down helpless priests. Perhaps Bill Bates and David Roth are both right. The only justice they understand comes out the end of a barrel. If so, then he should get the army now and let them take over. But somewhere deep inside his mind, another voice is talking. It's very faint, as if a long way off. There are no words, only a feeling, a sense that he must try another way. But what? He goes over in his mind, word for word, his telephone conversation with the terrorist almost 24 hours ago. The man was belligerent and crude, but in the end, he wanted to talk. When he knew that Muhammad was part of the visioneers, he wanted to talk. Now Mark could go one better. He could arrive on their doorstep with Muhammad, clearly showing he knew where they were hiding. And what would they talk about? As Muhammad said, he could probably negotiate something, but there are no breakthroughs in negotiations, only tactical gains and losses. And the world needs breakthroughs more than ever after tonight, after the murder of Louis Valdez. The world needs breakthroughs. And the irony doesn't escape him. Lying here in the dirt outside Bethlehem, birthplace of, Jesus, who was to be called the Christ, Savior of mankind, bringing his message of inextinguishable love. But in the end, they extinguished his life just a few miles from here, at Calvary, with the greatest possible brutality on a wicked cross of rough timber, driving nails with searing pain through his hands and feet while the crowd looked on. And 2,000 years later, Louis Valdez is shot 3 times through the chest with heavy caliber bullets, thrusting the life out of him again while the crowd looked on. And here in this dust, the very same dust that Joseph may have walked in to bring his pregnant wife to Bethlehem, the same violence unabated for 2,000 years in the face of the most extraordinarily loving life the world has ever seen, the same bloody violence that takes the lives of innocent people in bomb blasts and puts the knife to Esther's throat and guns down a gentle priest, the same bloody, useless, wretched violence while the crowd watches. At this moment, Mark catches his breath. Walking towards him, no more than 50 meters away, is a tall figure of a man in a saffron robe coming slowly down the road, looking directly at him. Mark springs to his feet, unconsciously taking care to remain screened from the buildings on the terrace below, but focusing intently on the man coming towards him. There's something very familiar in the stance, in the way he moves, effortlessly, almost gliding. Mark has seen him before, but where? Could it be? Could it be that here at Bethlehem, in this holy tragic land, that 2,000 years later, could this be coming towards him, bathed in the glow of early morning sunlight? Could it be? Images from his childhood in Sunday school, the figure of Jesus gathering the children around him. Could it be here, the figure of Christ coming towards him on this dusty road, a transfiguration? Too absurd to imagine, but perhaps so familiar. Could it be Jesus?
Oh, well, is it Jesus?
Well, no. Then maybe yes. You see, one of the ideas in the book is that Baba Satyananda is a spiritual guide for Mark. And this is Baba that we see. But it could very well be Jesus.
How interesting. What does Baba say to Mark?
He knows that Mark is agonizing over Luis's death and over Esther's danger, and he speaks plainly of what Mark is now expected to do. You, Mark, your work is for the living. The world is waiting breathless this morning, part stunned, mostly still unknowing. How you move now will make a great difference. Luis prepared your way. Now you must follow through. And it begins down there in that house where hate-filled minds are holding Esther, your Esther. You must free her. But in the way you do it, you can either move the world a little or lose the chance. Your heart is full of anger against the brutality that seems to run unfettered. But Mark, what you must know, and this is what I've come to tell you must know that the brutality has almost run its course. It has taken the world to the brink. Now you and your visioneers and many millions of like-minded souls across the planet are moving to take history away from the brink toward the horizon.
And that's the real message of the visioneers to our world, isn't it?
Well, the world will have to decide about that.
Yes, I'm sure it will. And soon. What happens next?
Baba leaves. And Mark goes back to the car. After a lot more soul-searching, he convinces the others to come with him down to the house to get Esther. It's quite a scene. You can imagine the impact of these three unarmed men walking into the hostile reception awaiting. They're confronted outside the house by two heavily armed men, and then a third one appears, young, dressed in black, and hooded. He stands in the doorway of the house, and Mark speaks. I am Mark Venture. His voice is strong and confident, confronting the other's energy and resonating to carry into the darkened rooms inside. This is Mohammed Hussein and David Roth. We've come for Esther Fisher and Jenny Lovitz.
Oh, I remember this scene. It's spellbinding. The man reveals his name as Kamel Rashid. He had a brother, Abdullah, who was killed by David Roth's Avengers.
Yes, and here is David Roth, unarmed, in front of him. And David's own son is lying dead in a funeral home in Jerusalem, victim of an attack by Kamel's associates. The air is thick with ugly hatred. Muhammad makes a plea to his Arab brothers for sense to prevail. How many times have I heard such useless words uttered by fools who would rather walk in a sea of blood than a field of grass? I am an Arab, and I will use all my energy up to my last breath to stop the killing, not to prolong it to the end of time. Let me tell you, all of you here, that now we have a chance for that. Here, standing right here amongst you, you have a man, unarmed and unafraid, not a diplomat or a politician, but a man of the people, leading a group of ordinary people, and I'm one of them, and you have another one locked up there inside, ordinary people, who are working tirelessly, fearlessly, to bring the world to its senses before it becomes such an abomination that no one could live on it, Arab, Jew, or anyone else. You have a chance here with this man to do something that in all your assaults and bombings you couldn't do in 1,000 years. Listen to him. Put aside your guns and listen to him, and you'll do more this day than in any since you picked up the first rock to throw or gun to shoot.
The intensity of Muhammad's words cut through the raw anger of Kamel's tirade, and a momentary hush settles on the group. Into that space, Mark ventures steps, sensing that this is his one chance to do what he has come to do.
Thank you, Muhammad, good friend. Kamel, I'm sorry about your brother. I didn't know about him. But Muhammad is your brother too, and he's speaking for your good. I would like to be your brother. Now, I know it's too soon for that, but I want you to know that when you're ready, I'm here. This morning, I lost my own spirit brother. It was a great tragedy for the world. His name was Luis Valdez. He was a visionary. He was speaking to the world about peace and love, and he was cut down by bullets in full view of the television audience of the world. It seems now, in the midst of all this torment, here almost too much to bear. The cruel bombing that took young Joshua's life, his mother weeping by his casket all through the night, his father with us here trying to get some things right, and Esther, a more precious gift to the world than any of us can probably know, and her friend Jenny, locked up there inside your house, both innocent victims in fear of their life, caught up like the rest of us in this stream of madness. I want you to know, Kamel, that I've come to end all that. I told my friends up at the car before we came down that I wanted to make room for a miracle to happen. I'm looking past your guns, past the hatred in your eyes. I'm searching for that inner part of you where I know there's a longing for something better. I heard that in your voice on the phone when we spoke. You're a young man and a leader. You have the time and the space to lead your people to a better place, not by bombs and bullets, but by the power of the vision in their minds. A vision for a future which they can share with the rest of the planet, Jews and Christians and Hindus and Buddhists and members of every nation. I want to tell you about the visionaries, about what we've begun to do, about the changes that can happen so quickly now because we've made a start and because people are ready, as they've never been before, to reach out, to listen, to learn, and finally to find the deep inner wisdom of their hearts that all of us are one with each other, brothers and sisters together, and with the planet, which now needs our care so desperately. Can we come into your house, Kamel, to talk? Can we see our friends? Can we embrace them? Can we tell you about what we're doing and the great hope that lies in the future for you and your people and for all of us? Can we do that now?
Mark stops speaking. It's not his words that are important. He knows that he must break through the dark force field of the man in front of him. He is consciously projecting his own energy outward. He feels Muhammad beside him doing the same, and David too, much weaker but trying. All of them trying to touch this man, to break through just a little, to make space for something to grow. The silence seems endless. Kamal Rashid searches their faces. The pistol wavers a little. Then suddenly he nods, tucks the gun into his belt, and steps away from the door, motioning them to come inside. They enter a sparsely furnished room, a few old carpets on the floor, and several chairs with frayed upholstery. A television set stands in one corner. Kamal motions them to sit down. He speaks to his men, who lower their rifles and stand at the back of the room watching. Kamal leaves. The others sit in silence. They hear voices from the back of the house. Mark stares at the doorway through which Kamal had left. Suddenly, he sees Esther standing there, looking small, disheveled, but incredibly beautiful. In an instant, she's in his arms. The close touch of their bodies sweep over them in waves. He buries his head in her long hair and feels small hands gripping tightly against his back, her body folding into his, clinging closely, more closely than he can ever remember holding a woman in his life. He looks into her face and sees the tears streaming and her mouth quivering as she bursts into the heavy sobs of relief from long stored up tension. Reluctantly, he lets her go, and she goes to embrace David and Muhammad. Jenny Lobix is there too, equally emotional, a slight trembling figure, embracing the three men and trying hard to stifle her sobbing. After that, a long session occurs where Mark and Mohammed try to convince Kamal of a new vision. Kamal listens well, but clearly doesn't trust, even in the words of Mohammed. He hears, but doesn't believe. His mind is too seared with the hatred and violence of too many sorties, too much application of the holy law of reprisal and persecution. Mark looks at his watch and sees it's coming up to 8 a.m. He makes a proposal.
Kamal, I said outside that this morning I lost a brother. I would like you to meet him now and hear his words. He died this morning because he dared to speak too prominently of the future we've just described to you. I think you might see through his story more clearly what you must do than in anything we can say. The entire episode was recorded by ZNN at 4 o'clock this morning. They're rebroadcasting it at 8 a.m. Will you watch it with us now?
When they tune in the channel, Pamela Barrett is already speaking, preparing the viewing audience for what she calls one of the most extraordinary and tragic events in television history. Then Louis Valdez is on, and Mark feels a lump catch in his throat, his body stiffens, and Esther sitting beside him senses the change. She takes his hand. He smiles and gently returns the pressure. Seeing Luis's presentation for the second time in a few hours, Mark struggles with mixed emotions. He sees the masterful weaving of condemnation and image, and the call for people to take back into their hands the power to create the future, founded on the sanctity of human life and peaceful cooperation. They come to the final moments as Luis is brought up close on camera and speaks to the transformation of the world, to a new age of enlightenment.
Tomorrow, I ask you to go out and form yourselves into bands of visioneers. Put up your dreams. Talk to each other and listen. Listen deeply to the wisdom of your collective minds at work, building something strong and rich and beautiful for all. This is our heritage. This is the nobility of our human spirit. This is the time of a new and wonderful beginnings. This, my friends, is...
Now, priest, die for El Condor.
The impact in the room is electrifying. Esther and Jenny scream with shock. Even the Arabs, who have barely been able to follow the words in English, gasp and stiffen in surprise at the viciousness of the attack. When George Cardinal faces the camera with the dead body of the priest lying in his arms, the tension in the room is stretched to the breaking point. Mark switches off the television set and turns to speak to the group.
When the life of Louis Valdez is taken by an assassin's bullet, it's an affront to the rest of us as members of the human race. But such violence is bred by the minds who would kill Abdullah and Joshua and all the thousands like them throughout the world. I would like us now to take Luis at his word, to part, if not as friends, at least no longer as enemies bent on each other's destruction. Camel, with your permission, Esther and Jenny will come away with us. There will be no report of this to the authorities, and no recriminations. You have my word on that. May we go now?
The young Arab leader takes the pistol out of his belt, holds it for a moment trained on Mark, and then sets it aside on a table.
You're a brave man, Mark Bencher, to have come here like this. And your friend there on the television, he was a brave and good man. We have no quarrel with such as you. Yes, you may take your women. I do this as a token. They're of little value to us here. I will test your word, Mark Bencher, and hold you accountable. You may go, all of you. My men will repair your car.
David Roth comes forward to speak to the young Arab.
Camel, let me say, for what it's worth to you, that what you do now will rebound a thousandfold to your stock among the Israeli community. I'm sure that Esther and I can see to that. I also want to say that I'm deeply sorry about your brother's death. If I had the power to undo it, I would. But I'm going now to bury my son. Perhaps you'll think of us. I know that when I see his casket lowered into the ground, I'll think of this meeting here this morning, and you have my word that David Roth will not be leading any more reprisals.
Without waiting for a reply, David nods to the young man and walks outside. Mohammed embraces Camel and they speak animatedly for a few moments in Arabic. Then Mohammed follows David, taking Jenny with him. Mark and Esther face their former captor. Mark extends his hand, but Camel shakes his head. They look hard at each other across a gap still too wide to bridge. Esther gently touches the young Arab's sleeve. Shalom,
Esther says quietly, then takes Mark's arm. They walk outside and follow the others who have already set off for the car, through the much larger crowd of children and adults who have gathered to stare curiously at the strange parade of foreigners passing through their midst.